Hey, Tara.
Hey.
And hey, everybody else. Welcome to Unpacked, a special series called Shoulder to Shoulder, brought to you by Kevin Castanero and Joelle Forte on inclusion and belonging in the context of the church.
Right?
Oh, boy. We have some incredible conversations in store for people.
Yeah.
What I loved about this whole series was, in true fashion, it was about story. It was about listening to people's stories, about how they engaged, not only within the context of the church, but outside of the church. How did they come to understand kind of a more truer version of themselves? And then how did they communicate that? True unpacked fashion, story, story, story.
All about story and some messiness in there too.
Yeah, it was. And you know what? Even we caught ourselves telling our stories.
Yeah, we did.
You know, which was kind of fun and exciting, honestly.
Yeah. And we had a guest host with us.
We did. Yeah. You know what? So often conversations about inclusion, about the marginalized or whatever within the context of institutions in particular, often happen without those folks present.
Yeah, we talk about them at arm's length.
That was something we were not interested in doing in this series. So we brought in a host. You know, both of us are you know, we're pretty straight.
Yep.
So we brought in somebody who is a close friend, a trusted friend from the LGBTQ plus community to be a part of all of the conversations we had.
Yeah, and we had a lot of good conversations.
We did. And so Kevin joined us, and boy, did he bring a unique perspective. You know what I have found? That when organizations start to think more inclusively, what they discover is that the broad spectrum of people expands their understanding of, well, God's love, but also the capacity that their community has to love others.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean you have to agree with everything.
Exactly. And you know what? This isn't really our point. You know, we're really not actually out to attack the church here or any organization for that matter. But we really are intending to challenge people to think differently about how they see themselves and how they see people outside. And so we brought in a whole host of different kinds of people, didn't we?
Yeah, it's such a range. And it's really about getting curious about different topics, like with ex-pastors and people who are trying to like work together with the church and create more inclusive environments.
Yeah, and some actual pastors.
Right.
Still pastoring pastors.
And then all these people from the LGBTQ plus community.
Yeah, and oh man, honestly, that was my favorite part.
Me too.
Was hearing people's stories. And we even took this series on the road and went to Lethbridge to hear some students kind of talk about their own story. My own child's in it.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, Erica. It was a real gift to the conversation as well. So, hey, I hope that whether this changes your mind or actually just challenges you to think differently about your faith, about your perspective on the world, and even towards the LGBTQ plus community, I hope that this is opening up your mind. Hey, we're glad that you decided to join us every Tuesday for the next many Tuesdays in a row. Unpacked is going to be bringing you Shoulder to Shoulder. So enjoy. Tara.
Hey.
Here we are again.
Yep.
Shoulder to Shoulder. I have said this in other intros, but wow, we have got to meet some incredible people.
I love it.
I do too. Today, Bill White, pastor, a pastor of children in the LGBTQ plus community, a pastor who has remained a pastor and led his church through becoming more of a theologically diverse community.
Yeah. Affirming? Do they call it that?
No, I can't remember. They say theologically diverse.
In other words,
you can hold your value. Your theological perspective, but the greater value of what kind of space we're going to provide here is going to be more important. I love that.
Yeah.
I found this episode difficult.
Yeah.
Straight up, like part of what we want to do here is be really honest about things. And it was a challenge for me to hear this story because it's a story, and this is what's so crazy. It's a beautiful story. It was what I dreamed. And so I think that as we listen to Bill, I do hope that you hear and you do have hope that institutions, that churches, that people who keep people at the forefront of their mind can experience change and transformation and create safe places and still hold what they believe.
Yep.
And that the deeper theology maybe would ring true. And so that was one of the great parts of this. And, you know, granted, you know, Bill is in his words, a super gay city.
Right. It's not even fair.
He was pretty funny. He has some good humor. And the first time we met him, he was like, yeah, I'm in a super gay city, like the third super gay city in the United States.
He makes us laugh and he tells really good stories.
He does. And you know what? That is a gift.
It is.
It really is a gift. And so I hope that you enjoy this episode. And I hope it gives you a sense of hope that people change and things change and institutions even can change. It's not without its struggle, but they can do it. And once again, enjoy Bill White. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Hey, friends.
How are you doing?
Good. Good, good.
Good, good. All right. Today, we have a new friend on. Bill White is his name, Pastor Bill White.
I prefer like O Divine Master.
Not Supreme Chancellor. Supreme Chancellor works for you.
That works too, actually, now that you say it.
Yeah, I like the ring of that. Pastor in Long Beach, California.
City Church,
Long Beach. And we're kind of excited to have you on and hear your story and a little bit of kind of what you've been up to over the last several years. We've just always believed that good, healthy growth happens in the context of story and real life. And real life is messy sometimes. And it doesn't go the way that we plan. But yet this is the space where it seems like we grow and we experience tension. And it seems like in the tension is the place where God seems to show up. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And we're going to talk church, and we want to hear a little bit of kind of what went on for you, because I absolutely loved hearing your story, and a bit on the painful side to hear your story personally. But we can talk about that later for me. Can you tell us a little bit about you, though, and tell us about your life, your story? Just give us a snapshot of who's Bill.
Sure. So I grew up back east in Richmond, Virginia, and, you know, kind of became active in my faith as a 16-year-old through some conservative evangelical parachurch ministry type stuff, and did that in college as well, and did a little work in Mexico City for a year, and I got engaged to my wife while there, and she works up on Skid Row in Los Angeles. She runs a safety net medical clinic for folks living on Skid Row, and got two kids, one who's 23, one who's 21. And yeah, pastoring a little church, planted the church 10 years ago. And remarkably, I haven't killed it yet. So we have a co-pastor model, which has been just delightful and life-saving to me. I spent 1 year as a solo pastor and truly sucked at it.
Yeah, I tried to do a little solo for a little while. Wasn't great at it. So I totally hear you on that. I'm always curious to know what happened to pastors that would force them into pastoral ministry.
I know, right? Like, there's so many real good jobs in the world. Why would you do this?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I just couldn't. And my parents desperately wanted me to go to Wall Street and make millions. And I tried in college. I went to the interviews with the big investment banks, and it just seemed soul crushing to me. So I just couldn't do it. So we literally bargained, my parents and I. They sent me through college, which was very generous of them, one of those fancy, snooty colleges. And so we bargained in my senior year that I would teach high school for a year instead of doing ministry, because I wanted to go save the world. And they thought that was the stupidest thing ever. And so I taught high school, but I was sort of an assistant chaplain at this snooty private school in New England. At the same time, and I loved being the chaplain, and I wasn't so good at being a teacher. And so then went to Mexico City and worked with folks who lived in garbage dumps and for a year, and really sucked at that. And so it's like, what am I going to do with my life? So finally, I came back. My wife went to medical school, and I ended up on staff with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and those were 5 wonderful years for me. I got a lot of mentoring, found a lot of healing, started therapy, you know, all the stuff that you wish you'd done earlier. And then I came on staff at a kind of a conservative mega church, evangelical mega church in the LA area. It was ethnically diverse. And so that was a huge priority for my wife and I. And so that's why we ended up there. And I just couldn't find myself doing anything else. I've been doing this forever. Well, you know, 34 years.
Wow. That's great. That's awesome. Yeah. I'm 28 years. I got 28 years and then that's it.
That's it.
Moved on. I'm still doing ministry. I just don't do it in the context of the church anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I encourage people all the time to get out. I mean, just get out. Like, why would you do this to yourself?
Yeah.
But that's part of the idea of you start a church. By planting a church, you create a culture that you're like, oh, I could actually live in this culture. And we tried to create a culture that's a little bit healthier than some of the ones we've seen. And so it's just been super delightful. So like our little church, like we just don't, like I literally send people every week. I send people to other churches. I'm like, oh yeah, we're probably not a great fit for you. Why don't you try this one out? Or I literally met with a brand new person this week and said, you know, why don't you check out this church? It might be a great place for you. You know, there's this free, like on our webpage, on our visit page, it lists all the other churches that we'd recommend to people. Like, yeah, come look at us, but no. Why don't you check out I used to need more people to show up because I'm a little fragile and small on the inside. And it made me feel bigger and stronger. And it's like, well, maybe that's why you have therapy.
Maybe that's what that's for.
That's what that's for.
Did that keep you in ministry then? Like being able to?
Yes.
Okay.
It's so freeing. Well, we also have an alternative business model. My wife's got a good job and my co-pastor, her husband has a good job. And so, you know, you're not in it for the money. And, you know, I think we have a ton of queer folk at our church. And so when you have a lot of queer folk at your church, you're never going to be a mega church, right? We're super quirky. We're super quirky. And so we've just let go of the dream.
Oh, some striking similarities here. Okay. One of the things that we really want is to hear kind of your story, and both your personal story, your story, your life at home with your own children, and what your church has been like over the last 10 years. And you've been on a very unique journey that when we heard you, when Tara and I were listening to you on a webcast that we were on, we were just like, we got to hear this guy. Mm-hmm. We got to get this guy on and hear his story, because it was just such a beautiful story. And I love the way that you're describing and talking about really what the kingdom of God can look like when we're not thinking power, when we're not thinking all of these other parts that in a lot of ways get mixed in with, you know, the institution of the church. Can you tell us a little bit about your life with your children and some of that kind of stuff, and just set the table for us on what happened? And
yeah, sure. So most of my adult life, I've been a conservative evangelical. My brother came out in 1990 and I had no idea what to do with him. You know, I love my brother and I'm like, well, but he's probably going to hell. And I'm like, what? That is like, and I think that just rubbed on me for decades. And, you know, he and I have been, you know, close over the years, and trying to sort that out. I think that caused a lot of cognitive dissonance in me. And then, so in my own family, I realized in 2013, that my son was gay, and he hadn't come out yet. But, you know, I have a lot of gay friends. And so I just, you know, my son and I have always been super close. So, you know, we just had all these conversations and I realized that's not how straight boys think. And so it was about 18 months later when he came out. So it was God's grace that I had 18 months to go on my own journey to figure out, like, so are you going to love your son? Are you going to welcome your son? Like, how are you going to do that piece? And it was, I mean, you know, maybe this is not what I'm supposed to say, but it was traumatic. I mean, I was a good conservative evangelical. You know, you can't have a gay son as a pastor. I mean, I went to this, my kind of sacred spot on these cliffs overlooking the ocean, and I am cussing God out. I'm throwing shit. I'm screaming, crying. And I mean, it's just this grief, like all my heterosexual dreams are dying. And it felt like a death to me. And it's just my own journey, and, you know, God have mercy on me, but it's the only way I could conceive of the world, right?
It's through this kind of traditional perspective that you had.
Yeah. And I thought I'm going to lose Jesus. I love Jesus. Jesus has been the best thing in my life, right? He's been the center of my life. I'm like, I'm going to lose freaking Jesus. And so just a really painful, hard process for me. My wife was not as hard. She didn't grow up conservative evangelical nearly as much. And that just wasn't her thing. So, I mean, there were other things. I think we all, in my generation, or at least my culture, kind of a Southern, more, a little bit more conservative, just culturally, not even religiously, there was just a lot of heterosexuality, you know, heteronormativity. And so a lot of sadness for me. But God's grace, I had 18 months to work through some stuff so that when my son came out, I don't have to like dump my shit on him. Mm-hmm. Right? I can actually be present to him. And so actually when my son came out, it was on a Sunday afternoon. He said, "Hey, Mom, Dad, I was thinking maybe we could go to Starbucks and talk some." And I told my wife, I said, "This is the day he's going to come out." So, you know, and she and I talked a lot, processed. And so literally I took my phone and I pressed record. I put it face down on the table. I didn't tell my son I was doing that, but I was like, "Hey, I want my son to be able to remember his coming out experience."
Oh, wow. Okay.
Was love present. And so he came out that day and shared with us. He was very thoughtful, kind. My son is very kind. He's just a good man. And we said, "Well, tell us your story. Help us understand what's that like for you and how, you know, and boy, we love you so much. We're so proud of you for, you know, sharing with us and going on your own journey. And I'm so sorry, you know, for the stuff that maybe we haven't done it as well, set you up well for life, this, that, and the other." And we talked for an hour. And so he knows he's got the recording, right? I mean, it wasn't for me. It was for him.
He's not just finding this out right now.
Okay, that's enough. That's good. It's out on the podcast. So it was honestly, I would have to say that my son coming out was certainly one of the greatest gifts of my life, to allow me to experience God in a deeper way, to break down some of the preconceived notions I had about the gospel, and to learn how to love better. Yeah, I think for the first time in my life, I don't know, it felt like it cost me a little something to follow Jesus.
Hmm.
You know, so a lot of our friends decided they didn't want to be our friends because we had a gay kid, which is, you know, there were some real painful moments. We told our church, we talked it through with my son, Timothy, and said, "Hey, how do you want to go about this?" And he said, "Well, you know, I'd like to tell my sister first." I'm like, "Great. Do you want us there? Or do you want to do it yourself?" Or he's like, "No, let's do it all together as a family." "Great. When, you know, would you like to do that sooner or later?" You know, so all this stuff, right? So we just processed, and he wanted to tell some other people. And then one day he says to me, after, you know, 6 or 8 weeks of, you know, him going through his process, telling folks, he's like, so Dad, people at the church are going to find out, aren't they?" I'm like, "You know, they are, son. They sure are, because you just told your discipleship group." Yeah. And so we made a plan on like how to tell people in the church. And so that process, started some dominoes falling. And so my daughter came out. She didn't come out till a little later. She was in college. She was first year in college. And that conversation was pretty different because, you know, in high school, we're like, well, hey, if you want to date a girl, I mean, just because the guys suck, like, feel free. She's like, no, Dad, that's stupid. Whatever, date whoever you want. You know, so it was just a little different. I think some of the heteronormativity had been broken down by then. And so she came out in college and it was just felt like a little bit of an easier conversation for us. I think there's still, even then, there's still some loss of some of those heterosexual dreams. Like when my kids were in utero, both of them, I started writing letters, not just to them, but to their spouses, to their heterosexual spouses. That's, and I've over the years have written their spouses. And that's, you know, you're like, oh, you know, so to change that mindset was just not easy. It's still not. I still do stupid things. Like, Dad, that's not what you say. Oh, shit. You know, there's a lot of that still, but yeah, we're learning, we're growing.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty awesome. There's a couple of things as you were sharing. So I have a daughter who came out to me as well. And my unique story around that was that I got prepared for that moment, which I didn't know was coming. I did not perceive 18 months in advance or those kind of things. But I was well prepared because of my relationship with Kevin, who's also on this call. But one thing that Kevin never prepared me for, and he teases me about this still regularly, is I don't have a very good gaydar.
I have a question I've been thinking about since Bill was talking about, you know, his 18 months before Timothy came out. Did you ever share how you were feeling during that period of time with your son?
No. I think for me, I didn't want to force him to come out. I wanted him to come out as, you know, I didn't want to out him to himself even, you know. I wanted to give him space and process. But what I did do is I would drop, like, I would leave a book around, you know, or we talk about the new Macklemore song, you know, and, you know what I'm saying? Like, so maybe I wasn't that subtle. Maybe you always knew. I don't, you should ask him.
You were trying to make it easy for him.
Yeah, I wanted to make it easy for him, you know, and I didn't want him to have to deal. I don't feel like it's the job of children to carry the emotional burdens of their parents.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Very, very good point. That to me is one of the heartbreaking things about some of the narrative that the conservative church in particular is continuing to live out, is that it is almost as if our young folks who are trying to figure out so many things in their life are also somehow supposed to be responsible for how other people react to some of the questions they have and the things that they're working through. So it is one of the heartbreaking things. Can you set the table for us about how did this go then in your church? Because I'm assuming your church didn't just be like, okie doke. You know, like, no problem. We're going to, you know, set up some extra seats over in that corner for the gays. However we want to talk about it. Like, we're trying not to be crass here. But at the same time, it's like, one of the things I have seen is that the LGBTQ community, plus community, has a sense of humor around so many more things than we do sometimes. So, but what did that look like for you in the context of being a pastor and your church?
Yeah. So that was 2015 when my son came out, and at the beginning of 2016. So my co-pastor then, the original founding co-pastor, who's no longer here, he's moved on to Iowa, back where his family's from. He and I realized, hey, we're in Long Beach, which is like the fourth most gay city in the nation. I've got a gay kid, and
if you google that, is that what it says?
Yeah.
I really liked in Brian's meeting that you said it was a super gay city, and Evan and I quickly realized we do not live in a super gay city.
We are not in a super gay city, but
or province or whatever. But it was really good descriptor.
We are super gay. I mean, I have like on my like I live on a corner on my block north, my block south, which is just a regular sort of city street. I mean, 14 gay folks. So, I mean, that's not even counting my own. So count my two. It's super gay. So you're like, we should talk about this. And our denomination was thinking about splitting. And so we actually pulled together a study team from our leadership at church, where we had three true conservatives, three true progressives, and half a dozen folks kind of in the middle. And we spent 18 months studying scripture, bringing in experts. We had a panel of local gay Christians come and talk with us and, you know, watch videos and did Bible commentary and all this stuff. And that was a remarkable process for us of learning how to listen to people who disagree with you, value people who you just don't understand where they're coming from.
What was the first night? What was the topic for the first night of that group? Because I know you teach it. I know you teach it other places, but I want to hear you say it. What did you teach that night?
I mean, the first night is basically on, like, how do you have a conversation? How do you come up from behind yourself? Who are you bringing into the room with you? What's at stake for you in this conversation? Like, come on, let's show up. Let's really be here and admit what we've got going on.
Yeah. And you entitled that How Not to Be.
Oh, that's a different conversation. We do some leadership training through our little nonprofit. And it's called How to Lead Without Being an Asshole. Turned out to be a very popular little thing. So
it's helpful.
Oh, okay. So I had mixed it up. I assumed that was how you started.
No, that's not. That was not our first night. So the first night is how to have a conversation. But anyway, so at the end of our 18-month process, we come back to the church, and the church had been updated along the way. We weren't in a vacuum, and we had a couple of town hall meetings and stuff. So we come back and we say, hey, we've unanimously voted to recognize that we are a theologically diverse church, and we're a theologically diverse team, and we embrace everyone. And so there will be no limits on leadership, marriage, pastoral ordination, board membership, based on gender or sexual orientation. And there was not a single person who left the church because of that announcement.
Wow.
Yeah, we'd gone on this. I mean, it was beautiful. So our conservative stayed, our progressive stayed, and we decided we were going to be a diverse church, and it was great. So 18 months earlier, when we said we're going to have this conversation and we're going to look at the scriptures, we're going to hear from LGBT people who are conservative and celibate, who are progressive and married, who are trans and everything, right? And we're going to read scripture, and this is how we're going to make up our team between progressives and conservatives. And we're going to read all the good materials out there. We lost about 2/3 of our church at the beginning of the conversation, because a lot of folks said, we don't think you should have that conversation. Mm-hmm. It just so happened it was the same year my co-pastor went back to Iowa to be with his, you know, where his whole extended family was. And so I was a solo pastor that one year. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm a truly sucky solo pastor. So it's not like I led well anyway. So let's just admit that there might have been more going on than just our process, but our process was a big part of it. So we lost a ton of people. But when we finally said, hey, this is where we land. And so technically, we're not an affirming church in the sense that we don't require leadership people to you have to believe in gay marriage. We're just theologically diverse, and we're fine with that. And so our, you know, queer people who are in leadership, like, they're in leadership with folks who may be conservative on particular issues around children and transitioning or whatever. We're fine with that. There's just a lot of mutual respect, and you're just going to be in leadership with people you disagree with about all kinds of stuff, about politics and immigration policy and, you know, what's the best way to do justice for the poor. So we just assume there's going to be difference. It's just that we don't have any bars in leadership. And so what happened is then we, you know, in our town, there's not a lot of progressive evangelical churches that are truly welcoming. And we already had a number of queer folk. So, you know, we just attracted a lot more LGBT folks into our community.
So as the pastor, I know, like, there have been critical moments in my church's lives. You know, I've served a couple of churches in my ministry time, and there were critical moments, critical meetings that took place along the way. And I'd love to say that I just went into there always feeling like the peace of Christ was going to win the day. But I didn't. I didn't actually go in there feeling that way, even though I'd love to say that I did. What was that? What was that like for you as a leader of that organization?
I mean, I'll address it in terms of family first. So, you know, my son and I, we don't always, and my daughter too, we don't always agree about, you know, the kind of conversations you should have and who should be included and not, and this, that, and the other. So I was with him. He was in college at the time when this study team was going on. And he's like, you know, why don't we just be affirming? And I said, well, we want to have conversations. We want to create space for other people to go on their journey, because I've had to go on a journey. And I recognize that, you know, there are a lot of folks who probably want to, but need space to. And so we had this conversation over breakfast. And I said to him, I said, Timothy, I need you to know something though, in this process with wherever our church ends up, because I don't know. I don't know where our study team is going to end up, but I know this: I will do your wedding. If it means I have no job, I don't care. I will do your wedding. So you can count on that, and we'll figure out the rest. And that was enough. You know, that was enough. Like, okay, great. Dad's on my side, you know. And as it turns out, you know, for the church, yeah, it was a lot of holding tension. A lot of holding tension. But I think holding tension is part of the definition of maturity. Like, I'm different than you. Okay. Let's hold that. I don't know. I think it helps you grow up to really sit with people that you love and you disagree with or see things differently with. So one of our best meetings on that study team, there's on the way, we studied Romans 1, one of the big clobber passages, right? And during the morning, it was a Saturday morning for like 3 hours. And we spent the first hour like, all right, we're only going to look at this through the progressive angle. Okay, the affirming angle. And we had people broken up in teams. And I said, I especially want to hear from all the conservatives, all right, to look at this text from the progressive, all the stuff you've read, all the commentaries and the study that we've done here. I want to hear from the conservatives, what are the best progressive arguments from Romans 1? And they did the work. Then the second hour was, okay, now we're going to study this from the conservative perspective. And I want to hear from the progressives. What are the best conservative arguments out of Romans 1? And they had to do the work. Right. And then we spent some time praying together. And on the way out, I'm talking with folks and I'm just checking in like, hey, how'd it go in there for you? And I talked to one of our conservative folks and, you know, young guy, super smart. And he's like, shit. They've got better arguments than I do. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then, yeah. And then the next guy out the door, literally the next guy out the door is this old guy who's been around forever. Super lefty. I'm like, how'd it go in there for you? He's like, I'd never heard those arguments from the conservatives. They're so thoughtful. I'm going to have to do some thinking here. And it was so delightful. Right? That we're like, okay, let's actually listen to each other and see where we come out. And, you know, our church is far more on the left now, because if you move to town, you've got tons of conservative evangelical churches you can go to and not a lot on the progressive evangelical side. So if you're a progressive evangelical, you're going to show up with us, and which is fine. You know, I'm fine with that. But the experience was so helpful in how do you manage differences around a thousand things.
And then recognizing that is where growth happens. Like you've named it. So it's so interesting. I know you're an Enneagram 8. So I'm following you on Instagram now. My wife's an Enneagram 8. She has said for years and years, she was like, until Christians can see that growth happens in tension, they're never going to get anywhere.
She's a prophet. I love those Enneagram 8s.
And I do think that that's one of those tensions for the church, for the institution of the church. It's like, what are we? Are we an institution that keeps ourselves safe and comfortable? Or are we an institution that believes in growth and that's tense and awkward and all those kind of things? And I was a pastor long enough to know that there were days when I just really wanted things to be quite comfortable. And it just was easier, and it felt like there was a consistency in giving, and we talked about power a little bit. It seemed like power wasn't, it was my power, so it was in the right place. And then there was this real tension for me that it was like, no, I actually set out here to see people grow. So you do this 18 months, and then everybody changed their mind. Is that right?
No. No, not a single, we went around the room at the end and no one had changed their theology. And yet everyone had agreed that we should welcome everyone. I mean, people were just like, no, we just went around, hey, has your perspective on LGBT, the theology around it changed? And we just went around, no. Everyone's like, no, I'm kind of where I'm at, where it was at the beginning. And yet there was unanimity around, but we realized that we differ. And so we need to demonstrate that to the church, that we're going to be welcoming to the church, and we're going to welcome whoever shows up, and we're not going to have any limits on who can be a leader here.
It's, I love it. We're not hearing stories like this enough.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, to be honest with you, like this is a challenging moment for me to hear that part of that story, because I think that is what I dreamed. That is what I still dream. And yet that isn't what happened in my own particular story. And it isn't what I observe happening in so many other churches' stories. So as a person who's been through it and I'm assuming you still are, you're working through lots of new things, new tensions to work through. One of the things, maybe I'll just ask it like this. One of the things we've asked almost every guest that's come on, some of them pastors, former pastors, some of them just regular folk. What hope do you have for the church?
I just keep hoping that the church will center on Jesus and be more welcoming of all kinds of people. And I think we've gotten too mixed up in the power games, and the number games. I still love Jesus and I still love the church, and I keep hoping that the church will look more like Jesus.
Do you have to continue to like talk about this story that your church went through, or how do you handle it when like new people come in? Do they challenge? That happened to us. Like, I worked at the church with Evan, and there would be like people wanting to come in and challenge our values or challenge what they believe, right? Like, that's just a normal process people do. But do you have to continue to tell this story and remind people like, oh no, we're allowed to disagree here. We're allowed to be on our own journeys, but we welcome everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's happened is we've gotten pretty clear about who we are and who we're not. And we're really a church for people with questions. We're not as good of a church if you're an answer person. And so we just gladly invite people to other churches, and it may be because the other churches, but we don't have a great youth group right now. So it's like, hey, go there because there's a great youth group. And you've got kids who are teenagers, like, hey, that's great. Or it could be like, hey, you're really looking for some certainty, or you like we don't fight, or we just don't fight about stuff. Like, hey, if you want to fight, this is probably not really the place for you. And most people look at a web page first, and our web page is pretty clear. We're a diverse, theologically diverse church. We have a lot of queer folk. We're real upfront about that. And if you don't love queer folk, then you're probably not going to show up. And you can, on a Sunday, we're not a big church. We planted a church. We want to plant other churches. We're not interested in being a big church. That doesn't excite us. It interests us to have influence and to see the kingdom of God come. But the church were, but you show up on a Sunday. So there were in person on Sunday, there were 100, 110 people, and 30, 35 of them are queer. I mean, it just, it. right? I mean, they're in leadership, they're up front, they're holding hands, or they're, you know, it's just like, that's just who we are. It's, you know, it's 30% of our congregation.
Yeah. When before you started the study, when you had the discussion about even wanting to do it, did anybody express fear about even starting the study, or anybody saying no, they didn't want to do it? Or was everybody just open about, let's do this?
Oh, no. I mean, a lot of our more conservative friends said, we don't think that you should do this study. We don't think you should have this conversation. We don't. The Bible is clear. You don't need to talk about it. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of that.
So as part of that, like, not just from your own story, but from, like you said, you look at your neighbor, you look at your neighborhood, and Christ calls us to love our neighbor, and you look at your neighbors, and...
I'm like pathologically extroverted. You know, I talk to everybody, anybody all the time. And so I'm always like, we have these, you know, events at my house for our neighbors, and we literally will have hundreds of neighbors at my house. So we do like a neighborhood pie baking contest. Last summer, I think we had 250 neighbors at our house. It was so fun, right? And so we Thanksgiving meals and just potlucks and, you know, Mardi Gras, whatever it is. And so I just know people. I have like almost 300 phone numbers of neighbors in my phone, and I use them. So, you know, I think, you know, that affects, when you're one of the co-pastors, that affects the culture of your church. And sure, I'd love to say, like, you know, Jesus says, love your neighbor. So that's what we're doing. I don't know. I think I just didn't have a choice. I think it's just who I am. I'm just that extroverted and needed to vent it on some poor community, and these people got stuck with me.
I love it. So this was just one of the questions I had for you, and this is off script, but it's like, do you still have folks who would hold a more conservative perspective? And like in so many ways, in our context, we're not in a super gay city. In a lot of ways, you know, when Kevin came to Christ and started to come to church and some of those kind of things, I felt as a pastor a real obligation to make it a safe place for him to learn and grow and experience transformation and all those kinds of things. And so there was and still is, I won't lie, still feel extremely protective. I'm reversing this on you now to say, how do you keep the conservatives safe in your context?
I mean, I think we still need to keep the LGBT community safe. I mean, there's just a lot, it is not safe out there. So, and in terms of keeping the conservatives safe, again, there's so many spaces for our conservative Christian friends to go. So most of the, we don't have a ton of conservatives. You know, just over the natural life cycle of a church, people come in and come out. And since there's so many good conservative churches in town, that's where people go when they move to town. Unless you've got a queer daughter and you're a conservative parent, or you've got a queer parent and you're a conservative daughter, right? And those folks a lot of times will show up at City Church. And so what that means is some of our most conservative folks are LGBTQ. Right. So they're celibate, or they're in a mixed orientation marriage, or they detransitioned, or whatever, but they want to be in a space where they can just be normal and like everybody else. And so we feel great about that. If you try to have my celibate friends like start dating, like, I'll kick your ass. I mean, and these are folks who are thoughtful and have processed and are, you know, not doing self-harm and stuff like that. Right. And if you try to break up one of these couples that they're trying to make it work, so it's a gay guy and a straight woman, like, F you, dude, like, over my dead body. Why are you trying to break them up? They made vows. They're trying to keep them. They did it with their eyes open. And so I think that's the community that I feel a little bit more protective of. And in terms of our theologically conservative community, like, I'm friends with all the churches in town, you know, and I respect them and I like them. I like my friends who are conservative evangelical pastors. I need them in my life. Conservative people conserve things. There's a lot that needs conserving, you know, and I'm super grateful for that. And they challenge me and help me think. And one of my conservative friends here in town has been my biggest advocate. He's been a huge advocate for me. So it's like, I'm just riding on the coattails of others. So of course I want to protect folks who might be more theologically conservative in our church and in our community. Yes, I would love everyone to go on a journey. I feel like the queer community has helped save my faith. And I feel like it can do that for so many others.
I absolutely love it. So question for you about your own future. So this meeting happens. If that meeting doesn't go well, where's Bill?
I don't know. I don't know where Bill goes. I think.
But Bill goes somewhere?
No, this is my neighborhood, man. I love my neighborhood. Are you kidding me?
So, yeah. That's what I thought you were going to say.
So I think I just start up a little. You know, we do a lot of house church-ish stuff with neighbors and folks. We do people coming over all the time. So we just try to support our local church and do stuff here or whatever. I don't know what we do.
I don't know if you answered this before. Why 18 months?
There's just a lot of stuff to think about. And in the middle of it, so it was designed to be 1 year. In the middle of it, my co-pastor left and I was leading the church and I seriously effed it up. And so I sort of took an emergency sabbatical because I'm like, I'm killing myself. I suck at this. What am I doing? So there was a little break in the middle for that as well. It just took us a while at the end to like, okay, so how do you be inclusive? What does that look like? And we just wanted to do a little bit more, have some more conversations. We put in an extra month where we brought in LGBT Christians and did a panel conversation and asked questions and try to understand what it's like to be queer better and stuff like that. So,
oh, these 12 folks still around?
No, great question. A few of them are, most of them are not. So one of our more conservative friends decided after we've done a few gay marriages that they were like, you know, I said yes, but I'm not sure that rests with me. And so they transitioned out. A couple of our other conservative folks became more progressive afterwards. Some of our folks moved out of town, a number of them, a bunch of them actually, moved to Colorado, moved to Seattle, moved to Iowa. And then some folks are still around.
As a parent and a pastor, you know that there are a lot of families, a lot of parents out there who are struggling through some of the questions, just like you've described you did. What do you want a parent to know who even this week or in this past year has had their child come out and their theological understanding, their tradition, their culture, all the things are clashing? What do you say to them? What does Pastor Bill say?
I grieve with them. I mean, so if it's just me and them, if their child's in the room, it looks different. But if just me and them, I grieve with them. And I share, it's so hard. I'm so sorry. You are grieving a lot. You're losing a lot of your certainty, a lot of your visions, a lot of your hopes and dreams. And so that's so hard. And at some point we have to get to the conversation where I say, but this actually can't be about you right now. You know, you're the adult. This is when you show up for your kid like a freaking hero. And you tell them, I've got your back. I'll fucking kill anybody who messes with you, you know? And I will absolutely love you and serve you till the day you die or I die. And I don't even know what I think, but man, I love you so much. I'm absolutely going to figure that out. I'm going to go on my journey. That doesn't have to do with you. That has to do with me, and that's separate. I am here for you.
And if there are kids in the room?
If the kids in the room, you don't do the grieving stuff because, you know, it's just not fair for a kid to have to see their parents sad for who they are. Like, parents, go get your therapist, get a therapist, shut up. You know, and so if the kid's in the room, then you have the conversation like, hey, you know, Joey, tell us about your journey. You're so courageous to be able, and so, I mean, you're being so vulnerable here. What a gracious invitation to your parent and to me to sit in the room with you as you share a little bit of your journey. I am in awe of you. You're amazing. Tell us a little bit, what is it like for you to have been gay? What, tell me about what it's like coming out. Like, wow, that, you know, so a lot of, you know, I want to bless them and I want to model to the parent pronoun usage, if there's pronouns involved. I want to model to the parent, like how to get behind their child, how to learn, how to be curious, how to love and welcome.
Yeah. So good.
You know, when I think about if parents could recognize the grace and the courage that their kids need to come out to them, it's unbelievable because they've struggled so much up until the point where they actually decide that they're going to say something. And when they do, they're still ready to give all this grace and say, I know this is a struggle for you. It was a struggle for me for the longest time before I was even able to utter these words to you. And I think that, you know, parents, if they could realize that before those conversations even happen, it would just, I think it would help to, you know, lower the tension a little bit and maybe not see themselves as the victim, that their kid is a big deal that they have to do this. And the courage that they need to drum up in order to do it is enormous.
As one queer friend once said very wisely, you know, for the kid coming out, this is the finish line of their marathon. And for the parent, it's the beginning. It's the starting line. And so the kid deserves to be celebrated. And the parent, like, they're just starting. And so in some ways, it is helpful if the kid can say what you just said, Kevin. I love that. Like, hey, I realize this is the beginning of your journey with this information. I've had it for a long time. And so I'm coming out and this is what I need from you. I mean, you've got to be a pretty mature kid to say that. But yes, that's ideal for a kid to be able to say to the parents and have a little bit of empathy for them. But ultimately, still, it's the parents' job. It's the parents' job to show up for their kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
What have we left out? This has been an amazing story. It is an amazing story, and it's a story of hope. And I needed one this afternoon. I actually really appreciate hearing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. Yeah.
I'll throw in just two last little things, just in case they're of interest. So one is, so our board now, as a church, we have a dozen folks on our board, and five of them are queer. And it's been a huge gift to us to just see things differently than, you know, when we started our board just 3 years ago, I guess, we had just one queer person. And so this next iteration just brought on a bunch more. And it's just been such a gift. I feel like I'm learning all the time how to see things differently, all the time. And it's not just about being LGBTQ. It's like, it's about life and parenting and leadership and so many good insights. But second, I could close with a story of a leader from our church that I think for me, this is a story I love. So this wonderful couple in our church, very mature Christians. So they've got an elementary school kid, young kid, who's like, hey, I actually am trans. Okay. And, you know, because they just, and the parents had always suspected. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, so of course, the first place that that the child wanted to try out their new pronouns was church, right? And so, you know, after a lot of conversation, you know, appropriate conversations about, you know, sorts of stuff. And I mean, these parents have already done all the research on everything. Like, sure, well, that sounds great. Let's work on this. And so that has transitioned pronouns and some clothing stuff and some basic stuff. And so, but it's come to pass that in their educational environment, there has been some challenges around pronouns, bathrooms, some other kids not being quite as accepting. And so mom sits down with their child and says, hey, I want to talk with you a little bit about things at school and how I think we're starting to see this now. And I just want to let you know, sometimes it's really hard for other kids to understand things like pronouns. And sometimes it's even hard for their parents to understand how to accept children that maybe they don't have experience with kids who've changed their pronouns and things like that. And so I want to talk about how, you know, we can be thoughtful. And the kid was like, Mom, rolls their eyes. Mom, I know. Not everyone goes to church, Mom. Because it's a church where everyone accepts you. I love it.
So good.
That is a good story.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely, absolutely love it. Hey, can you tell us a little bit about your, because you're not just, you got your church going on. You're doing that. You got a few things and you've explained some of the things your church does, but you also, can you tell us a little bit just about what you're up to in terms of like small church, bigger table?
Yeah, sure. So my co-pastor, Brenna Rubio, she and I just had so many conversations with different leaders, elders, churches, boards, pastors, about just some of the issues in church and like, hey, how do you do co-pastoring? How do you do inclusion? How do you structure a board so that it's actually healthy? And how do you create an environment of constructive dialogue in a church setting? And so we just had so many one-off conversations that we decided we started our own little nonprofit, which is Small Church, Big Table. And we just do coaching cohorts. Like right now, we're working with three different churches that are seeking to transition and become inclusive. So one's a church plant, and they're looking at starting it from the get-go, and then two are in other more established churches. One is going to start a process. The other's just pondering. So, you know, so we just do some coaching with different Christian leaders in that area of inclusion, but also in terms of how we handle power and create healthy culture of dialogue and difference within a church.
Because you are seeing a power imbalance as one of the primary issues.
Oof, so much. Yeah, we feel like, I think that's our experience, is that so many churches adopt a CEO model or a military model for their churches. And yeah, I think there can be times and places that's healthy. A lot of times it's not. Rise and Fall of Mars Hill podcast series, you know, there's just a lot of dysfunction in the power structures of our churches. And so to think through how not to swing, I think that the temptation is we swing from a hierarchical power structure to no decision-making structure at all, a flat power structure where you actually don't get any, you don't have clarity. And the key is to share power, but to do it around a healthy model of conflict and conversation, and with clear expectations and understandings of who is leading what. And so you can actually have a mutuality model for leadership that's not hierarchical, and it's also not chaos.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time today, but more importantly, like for the journey you have been on, I'm grateful as a pastor, the pastor part of me, I am grateful for pastors like you and churches like yours who have braved the tension and braved the tension in order to continue to love, to actually be founded on a deeper theology of love. And I know that that's not easy. And I'm appreciative of folks like you that have been doing that anyway, loving people anyways. So.
Well, thank you guys for, it's a fun conversation. And I appreciate you being curious about my life. You know, here I am just sitting around talking about myself for an hour. Like,
it's like therapy. It's great.
Yeah.
No, we appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah. Good to meet you too. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. All thanks. Right. See you.
Bye.
Take care.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
If this episode or the podcast has been helpful to you in any way, it would mean so much to us if you would take just 30 seconds to do one or all of these three things. First, follow or subscribe to the Unpacked podcast. This helps you never miss an episode, and it goes right to your device. And it helps us so more people can find it too. To do this, head to the show page on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Then just look for the follow or the plus sign and click it. It's so important to us and it would mean so much. And hey, while you're there, if you'd be willing to give us a review, preferably 5-star, and share an episode with a friend that you found helpful, we would be so grateful. We are so, so grateful for this little online community. And if you're looking for more ways to support or exclusive content, you can head to our Patreon account and you can find that in the link in our bio. Again, thanks for listening.